this moment of America's tragic loss, my people know that they too have lost a great man and a great friend. And just as President Kennedy has always stood by our side, ready to give the city of Berlin and the people of Germany courage and strength in times of crisis and need, I now bring with me to Washington our assurance that we stand together with the United States and its people in their time of grief. And I think I should add this: the death of President Kennedy should not divide the free world, but should bring us all closer together so we could keep alive those ideals President Kennedy stood for.
Mayor, do you know the new president, Lyndon Johnson?
Yes.
And have you met him before?
Yes.
What is your impression of him, sir?
I think this is not the time to go into any details. I'm absolutely convinced that President Johnson will follow up the policy of close cooperation, and we put great confidence in President Johnson.
Thanks so much.
West Berlin's Mayor Willy Brandt with his remarks on arrival in this country to attend President Kennedy's funeral.
As if the assassination of President Kennedy and the ensuing events following that particular crime were not enough, the whole weekend took a bizarre and most unpredictable and ununderstandable direction today when Lee Harvey Oswald, the man who has been named by authorities as the assassin of President Kennedy, was himself shot to death at point-blank range by a self-appointed executioner, and that man pulled the trigger while millions of Americans, saddened, grieving, mourning for the late president, were watching on television. 52-year-old Jack Ruby, described as a truculent operator of a Dallas striptease club and a fervent admirer of the slain president, pierced, got through a massive security ring of Dallas police that had been set up in Dallas City Jail to foil just this kind of attempt on the accused assassin's life. Ruby fired only one time. He used a .38 caliber snub-nosed pistol that was held only 4 inches from the chest of the 24-year-old Oswald. Ruby struck while the accused assassin of the 35th President of the United States, who was at that time handcuffed to a policeman, was being transferred from the Dallas City Jail to the Dallas County Jail. Oswald let out a cry. His face grimaced with pain. He fell to the floor in pain, and within 2 hours, he was dead. District Attorney Henry Wade said the state would now seek the death penalty for the portly, balding Jack Ruby. A second assassination doesn't help to justify the first one. This is what Wade told newsmen. And Wade disclosed that the cinch case against Oswald included a palm print, that is, essentially a fingerprint, found on the rifle that fired 2 bullets into Kennedy's throat and brain on Friday afternoon while the president rode in that ill-fated, tragic motorcade with his wife. So far as Oswald is concerned, said Wade, the case is closed. The shooting of Lee Harvey Oswald occurred with startling dramatic suddenness today, while the man believed to be the assassin of President Kennedy, as I say, was being moved from the Dallas City jail to the county courthouse in Dallas. For one of the most remarkable stories of this century, at least in terms of news reporting and news recording, this story must take prizes if a prize can ever be won on this kind of a story under these circumstances, for the immediacy with which it was covered, the dramatic coverage given it. Here's that story as it occurred.
Governor Connally has asked me to convey to the people of Texas, the nation, and the world our deep sorrow of the sickening tragedy which struck at one of President Kennedy's most triumphant hours. Words cannot fully express to Mrs. Kennedy and to the President's family our feelings, which we know all Texans share. Our son John will be our personal representative at the funeral of the President in Washington Monday. The governor joins me in asking that all Texans observe the day of mourning Monday in memory of the president. Speaking again for the governor and myself, I want to express our deepest appreciation for the wonderful friendship of so many fine people We have received many telegrams, phone calls, and personal visits, for which we are very grateful. I especially appreciate the friendship and warmth of the people of Dallas, both before and after the terrible tragedy. We would also like to thank those who have sent so many beautiful flowers to the hospital. It is our hope that our friends who might wish to do this would instead contribute to the fund for the family of Officer Tippett. Our grief is all the greater because of his sacrifice. The governor is now apparently out of danger. I talked to him just now, and he asked me to tell everyone he's going to be all right. He's in good spirits, and we deeply appreciate the care he has received at Parkland Hospital from the doctors, the nurses, and the staff. John had a very, very close call. We thank God he was spared. I have one other thing to say, if I can. We had been with the President and Mrs. Kennedy through the tour. It had been such a wonderful tour. And when we arrived in Dallas and the long motorcade, the people couldn't have been friendlier. The crowds couldn't have been more wonderful, more generous in their reaction to the President. And I just had such a good feeling about the way they had received him in this city. I had just turned around and said to him, "You can't say Dallas doesn't love you, Mr. President."
And that, of course, was Mrs. John Conley, the wife of the governor of Texas, the man who was riding just before President Kennedy, just in front of President Kennedy in the official limousine when President Kennedy was slain Friday afternoon. Mrs. Conley was holding a news conference on behalf of her husband. She and her husband have announced that they're sending their 17-year-old son to Washington as their personal representative at the funeral of President Kennedy. We had hoped to bring you a live report of that shooting this afternoon, and I believe we have that report now. This is a recording of the report by ABC News this afternoon when Lee Harvey Oswald was shot at the Dallas City Jail.
There's been a shooting at Dallas Police Station as Oswald was being transferred. For details, Bill Lord, ABC at City Hall. Bill.
Just 1 minute ago, they were bringing Oswald out. He had apparently changed clothes, and he was just going out the door, heading towards the armored car, and there was a bang. We believe it was a shot. And apparently, what has happened to it, we do not know at the present time. A policeman rushed to the scene, attempting to ascertain what had happened. Photographers were taking pictures. Is there someone down on the floor over there? Is there someone injured down on the floor? Apparently, Oswald is the word we get, but this is unconfirmed because no one can really see what has happened. There was a shot, one shot, and everyone here jumped to see what had happened. Apparently, Oswald was shot by a small elderly man. An elderly man with a small revolver. Well, I'm standing.
How far are you away, Bill?
I'm about 20 feet away from apparently where Oswald is. If this is Oswald, down on the floor, I cannot see him. There's a bench in between me. But they are examining a man who was on the floor, and the police look very concerned at this moment. The report is that an elderly man with a small revolver. Again, I caution that this I did not see, but these are the reports. There is someone down on the floor. A detective put his hand up on his forehead, shaking it. Oh, no, no, this has happened.
And that's how the news broke this afternoon of the shooting of Lee Harvey Oswald. The suspected assassin, as you know now, died less than 2 hours later Ironically, in the very same hospital, within just a very few feet of the place of the emergency room where the lifeless body of John Fitzgerald Kennedy was brought only 48 hours before. He died almost exactly to the minute, 48 hours after President Kennedy died. President Kennedy died at approximately 2 p.m. Friday afternoon, Eastern Standard Time, of course, and Lee Harvey Oswald died at that same time this afternoon. And late word just in from Dallas, the Dallas Morning News says in a copyrighted story today, that is Monday, that officers who searched Lee Harvey Oswald's room found a map on which a line marked the path of the bullet which killed President Kennedy. And the news said it learned about the map from a source which it calls reliable. The newspaper quoted the source that gave it this information as saying this: "This was a map of the city of Dallas. Oswald had placed marks at major intersections along the motorcade route, three or four as I recall. There was also a line from the Texas School Book Depository Building to Elm Street. And this was the trajectory of the bullets which struck the president and Texas Governor Conley." Now, this map apparently was the major evidence which Police Chief Jesse Curry reported that Dallas police officers had uncovered. Curry declined at that time to reveal the evidence, but said it definitely linked Oswald to the assassination of President Kennedy. Officers put out the theory, the news, that is the Dallas Morning News, said that Oswald, who was himself killed, as you recall, yesterday, Sunday, marked the other intersections while considering spots from which a sniper could get a good shot at the Kennedy motorcade. He knew it would move even slower than usual at these intersections. If this story from the Dallas Morning News is in fact true, it almost circumstantially makes it very clear that the man who did kill President Kennedy was Oswald, who is himself dead now.
Ever since 1:35 p.m. Friday afternoon, ABC Radio News has been broadcasting continuous reaction, continuously, to the slaying of John F. Kennedy. Our worldwide corps of correspondents brought you reports from global capitals, both hostile and friendly. But what about the people in the Soviet Union? How did they get the news? No, not the word they received through Pravda or Izvestia. How did they receive the news through the free world's most powerful broadcaster in the Soviet languages? Here is the report on Radio Liberty's around-the-clock broadcast from Paul Sanker.
How could it happen in a civilized country? What a terrible tragedy. What will happen now? These are questions which could very well be in the minds of any citizen at this time. But these are some of the many questions in the minds of Soviet citizens as well. For John F. Kennedy was highly respected in the Soviet Union, both by its citizens and by its leaders. Radio Liberty, upon hearing the news of the president's death, immediately set out to answer the questions which were in the minds of its listeners. Its broadcasts around the clock carried not only late news bulletins, but meaningful commentaries on the peaceful transition of power in a democratic society. Soviet listeners never have been exposed to such peaceful transitions in their own experience. Many of them remember the awful terror of silence and apprehension immediately after the death of Joseph Stalin, when all movement stopped, armored vehicles took their place before the Kremlin, and tanks ringed Moscow. The idea of continuity is absent from Soviet political experience, especially by peaceful means. And the Soviet government has done little, since it came to power, to inform its citizens of the transfer of responsibility in free societies. Radio Moscow first informed its listeners about the attempt on the president's life at 8 p.m. on the day of the assassination. President Kennedy's death and Mr. Johnson's assumption of the office of the president was reported in later Moscow newscasts. The Soviet news agency TASS reported the arrest of the suspect, as did Moscow Radio. They intimated that the assassination was the work of right-wing extremists, and the Soviet media pointed out that Dallas is one of the strongholds of extremist groups. The Communist Party newspaper Pravda carried a portrait of President Kennedy on its front page. The press and radio carried biographies of Mr. Kennedy and Mr. Johnson. The Russians noted President Kennedy's role in the Test Ban Treaty while mentioning that he met opposition from certain madmen in the United States. The Soviet press said that the American Communist Party sees the assassination as the work of pro-fascist, ultra-rightist forces. Messages of condolences from the Soviet Union were reported. The shocked dismay and horror of the American people over the assassination of President Kennedy is shared by peoples all over the world. And as we said, the peoples of the Soviet Union are no exception. In addition to sympathy for the grief of the American people, many Soviet citizens are deeply concerned over this criminal tragedy. They wonder how it could happen in the United States. They have long been nourished by official propaganda about so-called aggressive circles in the United States who want war with the USSR. And therefore, many citizens in the Soviet Union may tend to accept Radio Moscow's assumption that President Kennedy was killed by a right-wing extremist. Therefore, they are also apprehensive about possible changes in American policy which may increase international tensions. Soviet citizens are not fully aware of the strength of the American constitutional system, which ensures an orderly transition of power when such tragedies occur. They are not given the facts which show that the American political system assures continuity of government policy, particularly in foreign relations. They are not fully informed about the judicial process in this country, which may appear cumbersome and slow, even when it comes to punishing the assassin of the chief executive. After continued exposure to long-term official pronouncements about the many right-wing extremists in the United States, the Soviet citizen may find it difficult to accept the possibility that the murder of President Kennedy may have been done by a left-wing extremist, even though a suspect admitted his preference for Marxism and communism. These are problems which faced Radio Liberty in reporting the assassination of President Kennedy and its aftermath to listeners in the Soviet Union. Initially, Radio Liberty informed its listeners of the orderly transition of power, which is assured by the American constitutional system and its democratic process. And the Freedom Network calmly assured Soviet listeners